Chapter 12. The Archai. When the elevator deposited Trace in the basement office complex, he found business-ready Athena waiting for him. She greeted him stiffly with what he was coming to refer to as Smile 66-6, the fake robotic greeting of someone who really had no interest in you but had to pretend like it anyway. Trace tried to sneak a look at her clipboard to see what she so incessantly recorded on it, but she seemed wise to his ploy and adroitly kept it just out of his prying gaze. She had what looked like a stack of fresh forms trapped beneath the top page, and Trace had a bad feeling that all of them were meant for him. The gray metal door to telemeeting room 2 was clearly marked and had a built-in 20-inch digital screen that read, "Quiet, conference in session," with a list of upcoming times the room had been scheduled. Trace tried to act the gentleman and opened the door for Athena, but she muscled him out of the way and grabbed it herself, sticking out a hand to indicate he should wait. As Athena entered, a momentary wave of voices rolled out of the room and then was silenced as the door shut in his face. It opened again nearly instantaneously. "The Archai is ready for you," Athena announced. Trace felt like he should be nervous. This was the governing body of the Ash Angels, after all. But something in the back of his mind kept him calm. The worst that any of them could do was kick him out of the Ash Angel organization and force him to live life on his own. Life in the AAO hadn't exactly endeared itself to him, so whatever consequences they'd planned, he didn't fear them. Athena's waiting forms seemed far more fearsome than going back out into the world at the peak of his mental and physical powers. Once he stepped inside, the room impressed him. Like Archon Ramus's office, the telemeeting room was an oval, though of far greater dimensions. On the long side opposite the door, a glassy, curved screen hung from the ceiling, onto which tiny projectors embedded in the rear wall cast the images of around 20 faces in blue rectangles with rounded corners. A couple of the rectangles were red and filled with the word "waiting." Archon Ramus sat at a glassy conference table the same shape as the room. The tabletop screen displayed a satellite overview of the area where the ambush had occurred. Digital representations of Cassandra's file overspread the map, but Ramus flicked his hand across the glass and it disappeared, leaving the satellite image. All talking ceased as Trace took a seat in the expensive-looking black office chair next to Ramus. Athena took the one to her boss's left. The technophile within him had 100 questions about the software and hardware that powered everything, but he turned his attention to the faces on the glossy screen in front of him. The top part of the frame displayed the name of each Archon and Arcus in attendance, and there were colorful ones. Sixwing, Spear, Perseus, and others. 7 of the frames, those of the Archai, were larger. All 7 members were in attendance. Grand Arcus Gideon, Diarchus Joan, Arcus Magdalene of the Gabriels, Arcus Mars of the Michaels, Arcus Simeon of the Sanctus, Arcus Lux of the Oculum, and Arcus Ebenezer of the Scholus. The Archons who served beneath them were clumped around their respective Arcuses in a circle. It was the first time Trace had seen the Grand Arcus and Diarchus. Gideon held himself like a king in a court. His tanned face, aged to its prime, was square and strong, eyes reflecting intelligence and authority. Diarchus Joan was his equal and was red-headed like Arcus Magdalene, but of stronger features. The Archai was often referred to as the Seven, and each member had to have reached his or her 5th ascendancy before even being considered for the position as Arcus.
"Primus," Ramus said loudly. "Verify that communications are encrypted and secure and that the room is soundproofed and locked."
The door lock popped behind them, and a natural-sounding computer voice with an English accent replied. "Verified." Ramus leaned back in his chair and steepled his fingers.
"Part 2 of today's meeting will commence now. We have Trace with us, and our first order of business is to fill in a few gaps. Let it be understood that he has not filled out a 101-F report yet. It should be on file later today for everyone's perusal. Trace, we would like you to begin by using the map to explain what happened, beginning with the dread spotter you noticed at the elementary school. For your convenience, we have marked the school, the intersection where you left the car, and the Cactus Twin Hotel, where the major engagement took place. Also, outline for us why you decided to ignore ROE-44-2. A mission debrief. He could do this in his sleep. The story flowed without interruption until he revealed the reception of his bestowal in the frozen foods. As he related how he woke from the vision, Arcus Magdalene interrupted him. While the majority of the male Arcuses had morphed into their late 30s, Arcus Magdalene appeared in her early 20s, a gorgeous redhead sharing the same hard eyes as Cassandra.
"Forgive me, Trace, but do you mean to say you've received your first bestowal already? During this operation?"
"That's correct, ma'am." Mumbled expressions of surprise followed.
"Are you aware that this is unusual for a blank?" she continued.
"I was made aware, yes." Diarchus Joan popped in.
"I would like a copy of his file sent to me, Archon Ramus."
"He has no file. We're keeping him out of the system so we can be sure there is one blank the enemy does not know about. We have paper copies dealing with his training. I'll push those to you via courier."
"Fascinating development," Diarchus Joan said. "Primus, please add an agenda item for Session 3 to discuss Trace's bestowal and training."
"Item added," the computer confirmed. Ramus glanced at Trace. "Proceed."
Trace continued the story with no further interruptions as he narrated his dispatching the Dread behind the grocery store and being torched and losing all sense of time and direction. He was about to relate how Goldbow and Cassandra found him, but Ramus cut him off.
"Trace's recovery was already reported when it was in progress, so we will table that for now," Ramus stated.
"Damn fine job, son," Arcus Mars complimented him. "We just got confirmation that a fifth Dread was taken down as a result of this botched ambush."
"Thank you." "It was not a fine job," Archon Ramus interrupted. "Trace ignored ROE-44-2 and his trainer, and he lost a weapon and ammunition. This was not done according to protocol and put Ash Angels unnecessarily at risk, including your people, Mars." "We got lucky this time."
An argument broke out, the room filling with an incomprehensible cacophony of strident voices. Ramus eventually settled everyone down, and Arcus Magdalene cut in front of several who demanded attention.
"Trace, this is Arcus Magdalene again. Do you know what my position is?"
"Head of the Gabriels," he answered.
"That's correct. Like several here, I share some admiration for what you have done, but also some concern. Can you speak to Archon Ramus's question about why you ignored ROE-44-2? Are you even aware of what it is?"
It had been required learning before their first ride-along mission. "It states that in the event a rescue operation will compromise more Ash Angels than it will save, the operation should be aborted and all available operatives withdraw to a safe position."
"Were you aware that this rule of engagement had been invoked during your attempt to rescue Priscilla?" she asked.
"Yes."
"And did Cassandra instruct you not to leave the vehicle?"
"That is correct."
"Explain why you ignored both the ROE and your trainer," she pressed.
"Rule of engagement 99-1, he said defiantly. He'd come up with it in the car.
Archon Ramus and a fair number of the rest of the participants appeared nonplussed. From their downturned faces, he could tell several were querying their phones or desktops for the particular rule. Arcus Lux, an Asian woman with slanted eyes and nearly white hair, was the first to grin and then laugh.
Archon Ramus regarded Trace narrowly. "There is no such rule."
Lux spoke up in a musical voice.
"You are looking in the wrong manual, Ramus. Try the one written by Matthew, Section 18, Subsection 12.
She continued to laugh, and after a few long seconds, the vast majority of the rest figured it out and joined in the mirth.
Ramus rolled his eyes. "We are not talking about lost sheep and lost souls here, people."
Trace's next words came more easily and with more passion than he expected. Recounting yesterday's action and visiting Priscilla afterward reminded him exactly why he had chosen to jump out of the car.
"I disagree, Archon Ramus.
Like many here, I was in the military and understand the importance of rules and chain of command and yes, sir, and no, sir. Rule of Engagement 44-2 reduces Ash Angels in the field to a bunch of statistical probabilities and numbers, but we are still people. We still have souls. We still get scared and lost. We don't want to die or suffer. To be honest with you all, the reason I jumped out of that car was because I couldn't stand the thought of Priscilla in the hands of those monsters. Priscilla's first life ended in horror. Her husband beat her to death with a fire poker. Was I just going to sit on my ass and let Dreds brutally end her second life? Hell no. Not if I could help it. If something like this happens again, I'll do the same thing. That's for any Ash Angel. If that makes me a liability to this organization, then kick me out right now. The intensity of Trace's speech silenced the room, reactions ranging from thoughtful to broad smiles. An unhappy Ramus appeared ready to explode when an unreadable Arcus Magdalene took control.
That will be enough of that issue for now. We can review Trace's statement later if anyone feels the need to do so.
Dayspring, a long-faced, elderly-looking Archon, broke in.
We need to ask him about Cassandra. We cannot ignore this.
Drop it, Dayspring, Ramus chided. We're tired of this witch hunt of yours.
I agree, Magdalene concurred. This line of accusation has absolutely no evidentiary basis. It's a shot in the dark and a disgusting smear campaign against one of this organization's most decorated operatives.
I know she's a favorite pet of you two, Dayspring shot back acidly. But you cannot ignore the fact that the recent organized killings of Ash Angels directly correspond to documented troubles with Cassandra. I invoke the right to call a vote. Primus, please tally responses to the following query. Should members of this body be permitted to pursue a line of questioning with Trace concerning Cassandra?
The vote is now active, Primus reported. In seconds, the tally had come in, 12 for and 10 against. Ramus and Magdalene voiced their disgust, but Dayspring had won the right of inquiry.
First of all, Trace, Dayspring began, I am the head of operations over the Southwest area. Having seen your progress reports, your ride-along report, and this latest debrief, I share some of Ramus's concerns about you. But unlike him, I believe your actions are being influenced by and even encouraged by Cassandra.
This is not an inquiry, Ramus roared. This is character assassination. Cassandra—
I'll get to it, Ramus, Dayspring interrupted. Trace, has Cassandra ever said or done anything in your presence that you consider damaging to the Ash Angel organization, or seditious or contrary in any way?
Trace thought for a moment.
She seems unhappy with me, but I think it's on a personal level. She hasn't done anything I would consider traitorous in any way. I get the feeling that something that recently happened upset her, though she hasn't told me anything about it.
Do you consider her teaching methods effective?
That's it, Arcus Magdalene said sharply. You've got nothing, Dayspring. Ramus, I want you to set Trace up with a place of residence and give him a week off to rest or do Sanctus time. Trace, you're dismissed.
Trace looked to Archon Ramus, who nodded in approval. Trace stood to go. Arcus Mars threw in a parting shot.
If the Gabriels turn you down, get with me, son.
Athena tailed him out of the room. He took long strides to avoid her, but she ran him down like a lion on a wildebeest.
Trace, I have some forms for you to fill out. Here's the 101-F, the unplanned engagement report. Please be thorough. Here is a 199-L, lost weapon and munitions report. Get with Cassandra for the serial numbers. Here is a 155-TER, so you can evaluate the training you received at the elementary school. And, let's see, the 212-SEC security agreement stating you will not talk about the contents of the meeting you just participated in. Drop them off at my desk when you're done.
Fighting off the urge to burn the whole stack, Trace wandered around until he found a nice lobby with comfortable chairs. He had to beg a pen off someone's secretary and pull a heavy manual to provide backing to write on. The 199-L had to be the longest-winded way to say, "I lost my gun, so sorry," that he could imagine.
By the time he finished all the forms a few hours later, he caught himself massaging his writing hand out of mental habit, even though it didn't hurt. Relieved to be done, he returned to Athena's office and slapped them down on her desk with a thud. "Done," he said with finality, and turned to leave.
"Trace,"
she called sweetly, smile 66-6 bolted to her face. "It appears you'll be given a nice little rest after your unfortunate experience. You really should be more careful. The guidelines are there for a reason, you know. I have called ahead to Ident, and they are expecting you. Have a nice day." His own place. At last he would have somewhere to call his own and stash his stuff. But he wondered how it all worked. Would he have to keep food in the place just for pretenses? He certainly planned to buy all the fatty, sweet food everyone felt guilty about eating for the express purpose of drowning himself in it. Would he get a car? Spending money? By her wardrobe, car, and upscale apartment, Cassandra certainly did well for herself. As a rookie, he didn't expect her level of compensation, but he sincerely hoped he wasn't bound for a beat-up single-wide. Trace hoped to find Poe at the Ident office, but the secretary sent him to Adam, who was in charge of generating permanent cover identities. With a hearty greeting, the immaculately dressed Adam invited him into his office and had him sit in a modern chair meant more for looks than function.
"Let's see," he said, checking the virtual documents on his desktop. "The Archon has ordered me to get your first alternate identity set up today. It's unusual for cherubs to get one before graduation, but he states that there are extenuating circumstances. It shouldn't take long. I just need your Ash Angel ID."
As soon as Ash Angel ID came out of Adam's mouth, Trace knew he had just set himself up for another bureaucratic nightmare. "I'm not in the system," he informed him, watching Adam's face go from friendly to lost. "Security reasons, apparently."
"You don't have an Ash Angel ID?"
"It's sometimes called AAID, or pronounced aid." "Nope. They purposefully didn't give me one," Trace explained again. Adam was completely bewildered. After picking everyone's brain in any office within shouting distance and making 4 phone calls, the informal committee ruled that they would have to process Trace the old-fashioned way, since the computer software simply wouldn't function without a valid AAID. The old-fashioned way meant paper forms they had to drag out of the archives.
"It's really too bad," Adam lamented. "The Angel Alias software can whip up all the documents in a matter of minutes. Are you positive they—"
"Yes, I'm positive," he reconfirmed, wondering what it would take to drive the point home. He had clearly ruined Adam's afternoon, and the need to hand-generate all the papers and documents sent the entire Ident office back for hours. Trace plowed through more forms, posed for pictures, and worked with Adam on a suitable cover name and profession. The apartment building where he would stay was owned by the Ash Angel Corporation. After 7 hours of tedium, Adam handed him a worn wallet with money, credit cards, a driver's license, and even a gym membership.
"Okay, Trace, you are Jason Storm."
"I'm telling you, that sounds like a comic book superhero name, but we aren't changing it now.
You have $8,000 in Community Corners Credit Union, work as a freelance computer programmer and consultant, and are originally from Missouri. You'll need to get to Trevex Substation 46. They'll have a U-Haul there waiting for you in the morning full of furniture, clothes, appliances, etc. Your monthly stipend will be $3,000, and here are the keys to your apartment. Your car will be in the service garage. Good luck."
"Thanks," Trace replied, even though Adam's good luck sounded more like good riddance. Since he didn't have an AAID, he couldn't have an Ash Angel phone, so Adam instructed him to go somewhere and get signed up with a regular wireless phone and then call in to register it. His own car. Trace left Trevex D with a spring in his step and jogged to the garage about a half mile away. Night had fallen, and he was anxious to check out his place and get a phone before the day was out. The service garage, a large maintenance building near where they had collected the 4 Taurus, appeared shut down. Disappointed, Trace tried tapping on the greasy door anyway. A stout Ash Angel in a jumpsuit opened it.
"You Jason Storm?"
"That's me."
"Great name for a meteorologist. That's your cover?"
he asked as he picked some keys off a pegboard.
No, computer programmer.
Oh. Well, follow me. I'm afraid we had short notice on this one. We just barely got this one back from an operation on a border town, so... sorry.
Trace's expectations took a blow, but once the mechanic opened the door to the garage bay and flicked on the fluorescent lights, the blow turned fatal. Several seconds of speechless horror passed before his tongue loosened. Oh, come on,